Hey yo, and here we go. Another episode of We Talk Music's on the air, and in your ear once again, I am Martin, and I have with me the king of the casters, Mr. Brett Podcast. And Brett, we also have a guest, and this is going to be a good one. Who we got today?
Oh boy, this is a gentleman that I have been listening to for, you know, close to 30 years now, since I first heard Brother Kane. He's played with Alice Cooper, of course Thin Lizzy, the Black Star Riders. He's got a solo career. We are here to talk to him about that. Wow, Damon Johnson, you know, so busy, but thank you so much for coming on the show.
Fellas, thank you so much for having me. I have indeed been busy the last couple of weeks, but the previous 4 months, not so much.
Well, yeah, I mean, because of course you just released Battle Lessons, and that's, I mean, what a great song. And so that's from the new Battle Lessons album, which you've been working on, I guess, a little delayed, but scheduled for 2021 now.
Yeah, you know, if I could have my way about it, I would love to get the physical product out, out to my fans, you know, before the end of the year. But I have so many other things this year, guys. 2020, you know, it just kind of upended our schedule, and so we're just having to kind of finish the record in stages. My producer Nick Raskulinix is, you know, one of the greatest in the world, and you know, thankfully his phone rings a lot and he keeps busy, so he's been able to kind of fit me in while he's been working on some other bands that are also trying to make the most of this situation with the pandemic. So it's an imperfect schedule, I guess, but that's why I was thrilled to put the single out last week, and we're just gonna keep putting out more singles, I guess, until we can get the full length completed.
Well, yeah, and I mean for you now, I mean, it's like, so when you started, you were kind of a singer guitarist, and then you went to guitarist and singer, and now you're back to singer guitarist again, I guess. Eh?
I like that analogy. I don't think I've ever heard anyone put it like that, but it's 100% accurate. Yeah. When we put Brother Kane together, originally we had a singer, and that didn't work out. We tried some other singers, and long story short, I wound up getting behind the microphone guys literally by default, almost out of necessity. And, you know, it's not like I had been singing in the bars or, you know, harboring some deep seated desire to be in the middle of the stage, in the center of attention. You know what I mean? So, What a bizarre experience then for Brother Kane to put his first record out. We immediately had a hit at rock radio. We immediately started getting tours with some of our heroes, Robert Plant, Aerosmith, Bad Company. I mean, it was just all crazy. And, you know, that band worked incredibly hard throughout the entire length of the 90s. And for a multitude of reasons, you know, we just ran out of gas. Changes at our record company, changes in the rock music scene. I mean, just lots of stuff. And I think, you know, I was still so close to the time period when I was just a guitar player. I thought, well, man, I think I'd like to just do that for a while, just play guitar. And of course, I could have never dreamed that I would get a phone call first from John Waite. I got to play guitar for John for 2 or 3 years, and then Alice Cooper in 2004, and the stuff that came after that. So I'm not going to kid you. I definitely enjoyed just, you know, letting someone else do the heavy lifting, and all I had to do was play guitar. It was pretty nice.
What's the you mentioned, I mean, we're talking about your, you know, your solo album, and we're definitely going to get there, but since you mentioned Alice Cooper, what's the kind of working arrangement with a guy who's been done so many albums over the years? What's kind of the process musically that for what you contribute?
Well, now, do you mean what I contribute to Alice's show
music,
or to his?
Both. Yeah, I was thinking music, but to the show as well. I mean, it's. I mean, we've seen, I think, Alice about 4 times, and he's always.
Yeah,
a great
that's right.
Show.
Yeah, man, Coop has always got a great band together, and. But I will say that I think my most fulfilling experience during my 5 years with Alice was in 2005 when we did indeed make an album together. That record was called Dirty Diamonds, and what a thrill, what an amazing experience for me to be sitting at a table in a room, just me and Alice. I got my guitar, he's got his pen and paper, and he's writing songs. He turns into that guy that has written dozens and dozens of songs that, you know, many of which I've been listening to since I was a kid. So that was a real fulfilling experience. And he always was fast, you know, whatever ideas I threw at him, if it was a riff, if it was a vocal melody, I mean, clearly he's one of the all-time greats. So, you know, priceless experience. And then, you know, when it comes to the stage show, Alice is, he's so fearless with what he's doing himself. He just wants you to be a rock star. You know, I remember the first show, he's like, listen, Damon, I want you up front in the spotlight, you know, shoving it in people's face. You know, don't feel like you got to sit back because, you know, it's my name on the marquee, which I think is great advice for him to give to any of his musicians. Because really and truly, the only thing people care about is Alice Cooper. You know, there's no way I'm going to steal any of his thunder, no matter what I do. So just the greatest showman, one of the greats, man, of all time.
Absolutely. I always think he's one of the best songwriters, completely underrated. And I think Dirty Diamonds is a fantastic album. Really want to, again, also really underrated among his discography.
Well, thank you for that. I couldn't agree with you more. He is so underrated as a songwriter. I mean, he'd be the first to tell you he's had some fantastic collaborators to write with through the years. But listen, man, he shows up prepared. It's not like he just comes in and says, hey, I need you to write a song for me. He's got a notebook. He's got lyrics, ideas. He's got little things he has sung into his phone. And I can't tell you how many songs we started literally out on the golf course. You know,
I was going to ask you to golf with him.
Oh, yeah, a lot.
Yeah. Oh, guys, listen, hundreds of rounds of golf. I'm not exaggerating. It was incredible. But, you know, we'd be walking from the golf, you know, we've just made our putts. Now we're going back to the golf cart. And he would just start singing something. He'd go, hey, man, grab your phone and let's put this on the phone. We may want to revisit this later. You know, just a role model. You know, it's like that's what it takes, man. You got to keep the creative antenna up and working perpetually. And he really, I got to see firsthand how it's done, you know, and it's really helped me, honestly, guys, now that I'm back to singing and writing and doing my own thing now, man. Coop is, he's definitely showed me the way for sure.
I had a chance to meet him only for a brief moment once, but I decided to sing an old song back to him of his, and I don't think he recognized it with my singing. But what a good guy, though.
You would be surprised at how much that happens.
You know
what I mean? Because he does the meet and greets after the show now, and
yeah.
he would have great stories. You know, when he would come to the bus afterwards, he'd be like, wow. This lady walked up and started singing, you know, Only Women Bleed or, you know, Hello, Hooray,
yeah, I was,
whatever.
I was singing Under My Wheels.
Well, you know. Listen, man, if he couldn't understand that one, then it may be on you, brother.
That's how bad a singer I am, man. All right, back to the new album. Back to the new album after our detour here. The opening single, is it very representative of what the sound of the album is going to be like?
Very much. Very much. I think it's absolutely why we chose Battle Lessons, which is actually the title track. Just the sound, big guitars, tempo, energy. I think in the past, certainly back in the Brother Cain days, some of my other side projects, you know, the record would have one or two songs that were really, you know, clipping along at like 140 beats per minute. That's pretty fast. I think we're going to have five or six of those on this new record. And I don't know, man. I don't know really why it happened that way. It's just a lot of the things that I was working on at home at my desk, you know, which is where I do most of my writing. That's just how it turned out. You know, I had a very fulfilling experience making my last album, Memoirs of an Uprising, that got released at the end of 2018. And I don't know, I guess I just took that experience and moved it forward. My band and I got to play some great shows last year, and we got to support our friends in the band Clutch. We did a run with the Winery Dogs. And then just this past February, we got to go out and support the Legends in UFO, which was just so fantastic. So I know for a fact that, you know, those shows and just being out there, man, doing my own thing again, playing my songs back behind the microphone, I'm sure that informed my desire to write more songs that would be a good fit in the live show. So there's definitely going to be more songs like Battle Lessons on the record.
Well, yeah, and we also got a chance to hear Can't Clap Any Louder, which is another really good song. Definitely got a good groove to it.
Oh, thank you, brother. My favorite co-writer is my friend Jim Troglin, and we've known each other forever, like even back before the Brother Cain days, is how far we go back. And our wives are best friends, and our kids have kind of grown up together. So that started with an idea that he brought in. And as it does really with he and I all the time, you know, one of us will start it, and then the other one will take it and almost flip it completely on its head and turn it into something else entirely. And that was definitely an example of that. It was almost like a mid-tempo David Bowie-ish idea, I remember when I first saw it. And I just recall sitting at the drum machine banging out some faster drums. I don't know. Maybe I've been listening to Houston Dew or something like that. It's been the real fun part, for lack of a better word, guys, about just so much writing again. You know, inspiration is always just right in front of you. And I used to hear, you know, big artists talk about that. Like Paul McCartney especially used to say it all the time. Like, oh, it's easy. It's so easy, you know, to write songs. And that used to perplex me. I'm like, how can he say that? It's not easy to write songs. It's tough. It was for me, certainly in the beginning. So maybe after years and years of doing it, I'm certainly more confident, certainly getting more skillful, and maybe more shameless in just hearing something that I like and maybe stealing it. Oh, I like that song. I think I'll take that vocal melody, but I'll make it a guitar riff, and then I'll make the drums in double time instead of straight time, and no one will ever figure out what it was. I confess, there will be a little of that when the new record is finished.
But, you know, there's nothing wrong with that at the end. Like, I mean, music is all music, and so, I mean, everything comes from somewhere. Like, what did they say, that you know, nothing new has ever been or can be written anymore because it's already been written.
Yeah, I mean, no matter what you do, it's going to be that way.
Yeah, I think that famous quote is, there's nothing new under the sun. I don't know if it was Dylan that said that or John. One of the all-time greats said it. So certainly if those guys can borrow, any of the rest of us can. And I know that a lot of my peers that are songwriters, if they heard me say what I said just before, they'd be, you know, they'd shrug their shoulders like, what are you talking about, man? Of course you all rip it off. Like, you should have been doing that all along. That's the only key to getting this done. You just got to get inspired. And that's why I'm such a fan of the band Clutch. We've become friends over the last decade. They did a really cool run of dates when I had just joined Thin Lizzy, and they supported us in the UK back in 2012. And man, those guys, they make such great rock and roll records and great riffs and grooves and lyrics. And, they're definitely on repeat in my headphones when I'm, you know, out for a run or, you know, in the car with my kids or whatever. So, I really give them a lot of credit for influencing the energy on Battle Lessons for sure. They're great at it. They've been doing it a long time, and they're fantastic. So a big shout out to Clutch for sure.
Now, of course, you mentioned Thin Lizzy. You know, what's it like playing with Scott Gorham?
When it first happened, it took me 2 or 3 shows just to calm down. Because, you know, I had pictures of Thin Lizzy on my wall when I was 16. You know, I was just a kid. And because I saw them, I got to see the original band one time, and it was life-altering. So, you know, Thin Lizzy had informed so much of my growth as a guitar player, certainly Phil's lyric writing, the arrangements of the songs. I mean, so many of those Brother Kane songs, man, is a direct link to Thin Lizzy with some of that writing. So the first few shows were tough because I was just, you know, my jaw was on the floor, and I would have to almost kind of talk myself down a little bit, like, come on, man, you deserve to be here. You've earned this. So, you know, don't say something stupid. Just be cool. And, you know, and bring your skills to the table. And he and Brian Downey both were incredibly supportive and encouraging. And, you know, what a thrill, man, to get the endorsement from Brian Downey, because he was one of the last guys in the band to even hear me play. And, I mean, Brian, the guitarist that guy has been on stage with, you know, most all those guys should be in the Guitar Hall of Fame if there was one. You know, certainly Gary Moore, Scott Gorham, Brian Robertson, Eric Bell, Snowy White, come on. So, again, a thrill to get that opportunity. And then as time went on, as you guys know, we kind of morphed into Black Star Writers and started writing new music that was, you know, we didn't hesitate to kind of dive into the whole negative influence. And Ricky Warwick is so great at writing story lyrics and things. So certainly a tip of the hat to the Thin Lizzy music that had certainly changed mine and Ricky's life when we were kids. So also a thrill to be in the studio with Scott. And I remember we made that very first album, All Hell Breaks Loose, and I brought in this melodic idea on one of the songs, and I said, hey, Scott, what do you think about this? Would this work? And he immediately picked up his guitar. He goes, yeah, man, let me see if I can put a harmony to that. And when he started playing the harmony part to the part I had brought in, guys, like, I got emotional. I was like, mm-hmm. Holy, like, wow, it's happening. It's really happening. This is how they did it, you know. Huge moment for me as a guitar player. Unquestionably special. Grateful for that.
It's one of those things where that's a band that, while people know them and they know some of their songs, the influence in the musical industry and among players is so much greater than it is, I think, in their knowledge of kind of the general public. They don't realize just how many bands they've influenced. I mean, I think it may be very well be one of the 10 most influential bands on you know, since their inception, they've come out.
I couldn't agree with you more. Again, well said. It is a shame. It is one of the great misfortunes of rock history that Thin Lizzy did not achieve bigger status in North America, because across the pond in Europe, particularly in the UK, in Scandinavia, in Germany, they are beloved. I mean, they were a concert draw at the level of what Aerosmith is over here, mm-hmm. or certainly what Aerosmith was in the 70s. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I think it was cool for me as a teenager, you know, as we all did, man, we had our favorite bands, and even some of us would had a patch on our jacket or the bumper sticker on your car. You know, I was the Thin Lizzy guy, and everybody in school knew it, even though they didn't necessarily know the songs. Everyone knew the Boys Are Back in Town, maybe Jailbreak, but that was about it. But indeed, Thin Lizzy had, I think, 14 or 15 top 10 singles in the UK. I mean, that's like Britney Spears territory right there. If you talk about chart success, you know, it's just incredible. And the songs are all timeless, man. I mean, they hold up to this day. I don't know if you've had a chance yet to see the new movie, the Phil Lynott movie.
No, I haven't. No.
A friend of mine sent me a link, and I was so grateful to get to see, well, I guess, an advanced copy of it. And I mean, James Hetfield, of all people, says it very eloquently. Phil Lynott was the greatest rock star of all time. Mm-hmm. And one of the best songwriters of our generation, without question. You can't say it better than that.
Please go ahead.
I was just going to say, that guy should know.
Yeah, he would know. He would know. Much more so than me. All I know is that that the song that Phil Lynott did for his daughter, Sarah, is one of my top 10 favorite songs of all time. I love that song. It really hits me.
Yeah, he and Gary wrote that together. And a little footnote, guys, I named my second daughter Sarah after that song.
That's so cool.
I made sure to spell it with an H, just like they did. And there was no one on the earth more excited about me joining Thin Lizzy than my daughter Sarah. Because by 2011, I guess she was like 16 or 17. And that was a really great day when she came home from school and I said, "Hey, you're never going to believe what just happened." she was very, very excited.
That's
great.
Super cool. That's a great story. Yeah. You know, I have to say, you know, between Thin Lizzy, who's obviously been around for a while, but Brother Kane and Black Star Riders, you've been in bands with some of the coolest names in rock history, if nothing else. But I love all those names. Like those, it's like I think a name is underrated and it's important to grab an audience, you know, and make send a statement, send a message of what you're going to get. And I love all those.
I appreciate you saying that. And you know what? That speaks to the other, I guess, new energy for me is that I have, for the first time, given my solo band their own moniker.
That's right.
Which is the Get Ready.
Yeah.
And I think the Get Ready is a great name. And let me quantify that by saying I detest having to come up with band names. I hate it. Credit to my manager, Kevin. He said, "Damon, I think it's time." He goes, "You love Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. You love Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds. You love Neil Young and Crazy Horse. We need a name for this band." And I was like, no, please. Spare me. So his way of sparing me was he came up with the name. It was his idea to Get Ready. We had both, challenged each other to write 20 or 25 names down. And then we got together for lunch one day and we just read them back and forth. Like, what do you got? And he said, "Damon Johnson and the Get Ready." And he was almost about to read the next name. And I went, "Hang on, wait a minute. Say that again. What was that?" So I have to give credit where credit is due. It's a great name, man. I agree.
It's one of those ones, again, it does what it's supposed to do. See, grabs you by the throat and says, "Hey, pay attention. Pay attention to us."
I appreciate you saying that, man. And, you know, it's also cool because I can go down any musical path I want to. My entire career is definitely pretty diverse as far as the directions of it's all rock music for the most part, but it gets into sub genres for sure. And I like that, you know, I wouldn't want to be limited, you know, so it's better than, you know, Damon Johnson and the destructive, you know, Blowtorch. And then you got to play metal. You know what I mean?
That's my new band name. I want the destructive blowtorch. Yeah.
I'm Monson and the Grinding Balls. That's my
but
band name.
You know what
name.
I mean?
Oh, I know exactly what you mean. Absolutely.
If it was Damon Johnson and the Blues Hounds, then I'm going to have to stick strictly to Albert King licks, pretty much, you know?
Yeah.
So, to Get Ready, we can play anything we want, and it'll fit.
Well, but yeah, it's interesting. Like, you speak of all of the different music that you've gone through. I mean, from you know, Brother Kane had that little bit of a different sound, but then, you know, your early solo albums were very very acoustic, and then even your work with Whiskey Falls, which is, you know, straight country basically.
Yeah, man. Whiskey Falls was an interesting situation, because I had been in Alice's band for just over 2 years, and it's funny because I don't think I've ever pursued a creative venture because I thought, wow, maybe we could have big success with this. It was always more just motivated by how much I love the music and knowing the people involved. But Whiskey Falls, I was the last guy to be a part of that. My friend was in the band. He sent me the music. He's like, Damon, this is our future. They got all this stuff going on. You'd be the perfect fit because you'd bring a rock edge to it. But the songs are, you know, custom made for modern country radio. You know, they had a lot of stuff working for them, man. Had some business, you know, good business practices going. And on paper, it looked really, really good. And I couldn't deny that the songs were good and were a good fit for country radio, a format I didn't listen to at all. It was an interesting venture. I certainly learned a lot. And the greatest outcome from being a part of Whiskey Falls is I don't know that I would have ever moved to Nashville had it not been for the 2 years I was in that band. It took me a while to get here after Whiskey Falls, but my wife and I just felt like, you know, maybe one day this would be the place for us to kind of make our home base, because I already knew a lot of musicians here, rock musicians. So true to that point, I could have never imagined that, you know, I would meet Nick Raskulinix, who also lives here, that I would, you know, have two or three friends that all have great studios where I can make, you know, produce records myself, certainly get the drums recorded and make them sound great. You know, I never had access to stuff like that in my old hometown of Birmingham, Alabama, which I love, but it's definitely been, you know, rocket fuel for my music to get to Nashville. You know, country music capital of the world had nothing to do with it for me. It's all been rock and roll. So I'm thrilled, man, and certainly grateful.
Well, and there's so many. Like, I spent a little bit of time in Nashville a couple of years ago, and, I mean, great, great city. But, yeah, so many people just choose to live there. And like you say, it doesn't matter if it's country music. I mean, you know, Tom Kiefer of Cinderella, he lives there. Like, so many guys that are just part of, you know, music.
Yeah, man, Tom Kiefer is practically my neighbor. He kind of lives, he kind of lives on what is, I guess, sort of the south end of this area we live in is called Bellevue. And back before the pandemic, I would run into Tom all the time at Starbucks. And it was wild, man, because I'd always be in there in my running, you know, my running pants and my gym shoes and, you know, baseball cap. And Tom comes rolling in there, guys, at 9 in the morning in full rock and roll, like, leather jacket.
Just
looking
that.
Like a badass. I said, Tom, you are so bad for my image, dude. You know, like I gotta roll like you, brother. He would laugh. He'd be like, "What are you talking about, man? I need to be going to the gym with you. But I'm taking this coffee back to the house. I'll see you later." Yeah, man. Everybody's here. Everybody's here. Peter Frampton lives here. The Cheap Trick guys are here. I think there's a lot of guys that I don't ever see, but I know they're here. Like, two of the Motley Crue guys are here now. Dave Mustaine lives in Nashville. The list goes on and on. Are you aware that, you know, Richie Faulkner from Judas Priest, who we just did the big live stream?
That's right. Yeah, I was gonna say, there's the more get ready for you.
That's right, man. Richie moved here in the fall of last year, and we've been friends for a long time. So it was just really just dumb luck, you know, that this worked out, that, you know, we were both stuck at home because of COVID and I needed to release a new single. And I was just trying to come up with something to bring some attention to that, you know? So we came up with this idea about playing some Thin Lizzy songs, which was so much fun. And Richie killed it. That guy, not exaggerating, guys, Richie Faulkner is one of my absolute favorite, you know, rock, hard rock and metal guitarists. He's my favorite. He's one of the best. I mean, I don't know, you know, where his career is going to go beyond Judas Priest, but the sky is the limit for him, man. I think he's going to have a similar impact to like a Michael Schenker or a Zakk Wylde, you know, someone like that. He's that great of a player, you know, has a style. So he's unabashed about his influences, but he's also worked it into a style that's his own. And that's a rarity these days. It's really hard to do that. And he's doing it, man. And he's just a sweetheart of a human being. So again, bonus for moving to Nashville. You know, we're so happy here and grateful that we've got great friends here.
Well, yeah, I mean, seeing some of the show and like, you know, Richie with the flying V and just you can just see the Judas Priest the way he plays. But I mean, and it's so it's so in your face in that regard.
I agree. I haven't I kind of watched part of it with my family afterwards, but I just you can tell Richie and I both have come from established two guitar bands. There was never any awkwardness, you know, like when we would play harmony parts together or, you know, it was fun, guys. I can't overstate just how refreshing it was to be on a bigger stage and plug in the big amps and have, you know, at least a dozen lights up there. I think there was even a little bit of a smoke machine, you know. It just felt the closest to anything normal that we've had since March. I mean, the last show, the band proper show that my band played was March the 13th.
Wow.
Incredible. Oh. Incredible, you know, that everyone's having to go through this.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's been horrible. I mean, so many concerts that have been missed, and it's terrible. Now, one of the things I'm fascinated by, and of course, you know, you with Richie, but I mean, you know, going to Thin Lizzy and we talked about Judas Priest, like the twin lead guitar sound, like, you know, it's so awesome. Why is it that more people don't do that, do you think?
It's a great question. I think everyone knows that there's a handful of bands that basically own that real estate. Thin Lizzy, the Allman Brothers to some degree, even Lynyrd Skynyrd. I mean, they didn't do a lot of harmony, but they definitely were orchestrated guitar parts. I don't know, man. I think, honestly, now that you're asking, I'm realizing that most bands, there's a distinction between if it has two guitar players, one is the lead player, the other is a rhythm player.
Mm-hmm.
And they just don't play anything but rhythm. But Judas Priest, they play harmonies, a lot of harmonies and Priest. Iron Maiden, same thing. I mean, Maiden was, you know, they're outspoken about their love of Thin Lizzy and the influence of that band on them. I guess it just gets down to, you know, lead guitar players can be very egotistical. And I'm not saying that to be funny. That's just a fact. So it can be difficult to get two really great players to coexist in the same band. And I guess that's a pretty informed answer to your question. I think it's probably got more to do with just ego, you know, because it can be such a great thing when it's done right. Listen, man, my wife and I are big fans of the Strokes. Mm-hmm. Man, those guys play great guitar, man. Great guitar parts. They work out some cool harmonies. You know, clearly they've got a fantastic creative working relationship, and the music benefits from that. And I'm even on my solo stuff, guys, I'm putting harmony stuff on there. I'm the only guitar player, but when I hear the song, you know, in my truck or I'm on my headphones, there's a lot of times, man, I just want to hear like, oh, this part would be better if it had a harmony with it. So I'm never going to hesitate to add that to a part.
Was there ever a moment where you thought, of adding a second guitarist to the Get Ready?
Well, not to the Get Ready, in as much as the Get Ready has only existed, you know, for the last few months. When I first started going out and playing as a solo artist, guys, which was like 2016, I did have another guitar player, another great friend of mine from here in town. And, you know, Brother Kane had two guitars. Alice always had at least two guitar players. Lizzie, two guitars. So it just made sense. You know, hey, if I'm going to be playing all this music from throughout my career, you know, let's have two guitars. Well, a unique thing happened, I think, that was probably influenced a bit by how much solo acoustic performing I've also done in the last 20 years. I've gotten very comfortable at entertaining just me and an acoustic guitar and a microphone. And, you know, there were a lot of these, you know, when we first started going out and playing dates, man, let's be honest. You know, a lot of the show offers, they weren't big offers. It's like, hey, here's the budget. Do you want to do the gig? No or yes. And I'm in the, you know, I'm trying to get this thing off the ground. So I'm saying yes to everything, no matter what. So there was a little bit of an economic component there for a while. It's like, well, we can't all bring home, you know, $200 unless we go as a three piece. there were a couple of those, and I don't know, man, it got to be fun. It was a little less stage volume, which I'm, the older I get, the more committed I am to that. Not because I don't want to hear it loud myself, but I just know the audience that, listen, we all grew up loving rock and roll, but my fans are, many of them are the same age I am. And they don't necessarily want to sit down and get their faces peeled off like we used to. You know, man, like, guys, I'm telling you, Brother Kane, we were a blowtorch. We were so loud. You know, me and Dave Anderson, we had 100-watt Marshalls cranked. We just played loud all the time. And I think I'm over that. If, you know, they say if it's too loud, you're too old. Yes, I'm too old.
Officially too old, yes.
You know, everybody's too old. The audience is too old, you know. So it just started to feel really good. And I think, you know, the biggest endorsement was when we went out and played with Clutch, and we went out and played with UFO, and we did it as a three-piece, and the reaction was tremendous. The Get Ready is going to roll as a three-piece for a while. And, hey, just like Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, if I want to add somebody else down the road, I will. We could add two people. You know, we do whatever we want. So, but right now, man, it's a lot of fun, and I'm having a blast just doing it as a trio.
One of the things I really want to ask you about is the unreleased album that you did with the Damn Yankees.
Indeed. I get asked about that a lot.
I'm sure.
And I get, no, listen, man, I totally get people's fascination with it, because on paper, it's certainly very, very interesting. And I always like to preface anything I say about the Damn Yankees with, you know, how great of an experience it was. Those guys all were always super respectful and made me feel like one of them. And I certainly was not. You know, these guys had all had giant success, not just as the Damn Yankees, but obviously in their other bands. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, for me to get brought in like that, and I was essentially taking Tommy Shaw's place because he could not adjust his schedule to fulfill this, you know, new album obligation that the band had already agreed they were going to do. He needed to give his focus to Styx because this was the year 2000 and they had just parted ways with Dennis DeYoung. So Tommy had given Ted and Jack and Michael his blessing for them to go out and get, you know, bring in someone else. And through a weird chain of events, that someone else became me. And we wrote a lot of songs. We spent a lot of time in Northern California at Jack Blade's place. And it was just, man, it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. Writing with Jack was great. He was super excited, you know, about the ideas I was bringing in. I had known Ted on a personal level more than any of the other guys because Brother Kane had toured with Ted a few times through the years. So I just quickly felt really comfortable, man. And, you know, the end of the story is once we got the record finished, we brought Tommy. Tommy came in and sang some harmonies on some stuff. And there were a couple songs he and Jack had already written that were really good. And we made a record, mixed it, mastered it. Everybody gets a copy. And we were just all kind of blasé about it. The band, Kolodner at the record label. And we had already spent so much time on it that by that point, you know, Ted had commitments with his solo tour. Night Ranger was going back out. And we essentially kind of put it on pause, like, well, let's revisit this at another time. And, you know, we just never did. So it's up to those guys. It's their band. Ultimately, it's their record and decision to, you know, as to what's going to come of that. But I wouldn't hold my breath. I don't think they're going to put that out. And that's all right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's
some of the songs. Sorry to interrupt, but some of the songs have made their way to other, you know, like Jack and Tommy did a duo record together. Ted put one of the songs on his record. Jack put one on a solo record. So the songs are floating around out there somewhere.
Yeah, they don't have to release it. They just have to give me a copy. That's all I care about.
Well, listen, I know a guy for a small fee, $7,000 I can get you.
That's small to me. Yeah, I carry that around in my sock just for safety. Yeah, that's the case. One of the things I wanted to ask you about actually was the you were on a tribute album for a Japanese band, CM Shade. So many great people were on it. Mark Slaughter and Richie Kotzen and George Lynch, I believe, was on it. Sebastian Bach. Janie Lane, I think, was the reason why I tracked it down and found it. And I'm like, this is really good music. I never heard of the band, of course. Did you know that band before you worked on that album?
No. I was totally unfamiliar with them. And it's interesting that you're bringing that record up because I had a blast making it, and essentially all the work was done. All the heavy lifting was my producer friend, Marty Fredrickson, who I co-wrote a bunch of songs with and Brother Kane. I think Brian Titchie did the drums, and man, it may have even been Marty and I covering the bass part, but listen, those songs are intense, right?
Yeah.
You know, they're like, CM Shade's like a proper, like almost a metal pop band. So I sat there with the engineer, and man, I just replicated all those rhythm guitar parts, and in many cases, some of the actual solos, just to create these new music beds to bring in the guest singers. Obviously, you know, George Lynch is going to cover that himself, but like even Richie Kotzen, I played all the rhythm parts on the song that he sang and played a solo on. And, you know, I didn't really even know any of those other guys, you know, the guests. So you're one of the first people to ask me about that record. I'm not going to kid you. That's how kind of off the beaten path it is. But I do understand that in Japan they were massive, massive. So credit again to Marty Fredrickson for bringing me in on that.
Marty's great, for sure. I mean, so much of, like, his name comes up in so much of the stuff that we listen to, for sure.
Well, no surprise. Guess what? Marty lives in Nashville, too. You know, for as long as we've been making music together, he's one of my friends that I see the least because I'm so busy, he's so busy. But every once in a while, our lightsabers will cross, and we get to spend a little time together. But I love Marty, man. He's a very, very important relationship in the story of my musical life, without a doubt.
One of the things I wanted to ask about is of course, you know, you're releasing Battle Lessons on Double Dragon Records, which is your own label kind of thing. What's it like to have and release music on your own label?
It is a lot of work, boys. It's a lot of work. I mean, I knew it would be. There's nothing about that is a surprise, but again, I've been inspired by some other artists, many of them not in rock. They're more like Americana artists. I look to Jason Isbell. He's one example. And even the late, great legend John Prine, who we sadly lost this mm-hmm. year. You know, John had his label Oh Boy Records. And man, I've always tried to think like a businessman. It's not so much about control as it is about making good decisions. And the thing I'm loving about putting these records out myself is that all the decisions are mine. They have to be. And if there's a problem, you know, the buck stops with me. I've got to solve it. I got to figure it out. If there's a delay, it's on me. If there's a question, everybody comes to me, and I'm okay with that. I've certainly been in the business long enough that it's inexcusable that I wouldn't have learned some things by now. You know what I mean?
I don't know. I've learned nothing in my life, so it can be done.
If you work hard enough, then you too can learn nothing.
Nothing.
You're right. I guess, man, well, see, even that is hard work. Even learning nothing is hard work, man.
You'd be surprised.
Well, to a very, very brilliant point, to a great example of what we're talking about. And I'm really happy you asked that question. Just this very morning, I got onto my laptop to Google, how do I get my Double Dragon Records releases on Amazon? What is the biggest one-stop shop in the world now? It's Amazon. And no surprise, guys, it's really hard. there's no website. There's no like, oh, hey, are you putting out your own records? You know, send this email here and we'll show you how to get your product up. And people from all over the world can get access to your vinyl and your CDs. You know, we just take a small cut, no problem. Of course, it's not like that. They make it impossible. And so I'm going to have to figure that out, because it's only going to improve my business if I can find a way for people to go straight to Amazon, type in Damon Johnson, boom. Battle Lessons pops up, CD, final. Here's his other releases, all the way back to Dust, the acoustic records, et cetera, et cetera. And then it'll cross tie, you know, with Brother Kane, Black Star Riders, whatever. You would think by this point, man, it'd be easy. And sadly, it is not easy. So I'm going to have to roll up my sleeves and do some real digging on how to solve that challenge. But I'm going to figure it out. Somebody. I will figure it out.
Somebody there in Nashville's got to know. Somebody there in Nashville that you would think would have to know, right?
Yeah, man. There are a couple people I know here that have truly been helpful with me, like with my digital distribution and some of my just marketing content. You know, I met a great video guy that's helped with these live streams. And I agree with you. There'll be somebody here in this town that's going to know the answer to that question.
Because if Google doesn't know.
No, Google. Well, it just took me down this whole other rabbit hole that just said instantly, like, okay, yeah, this is going to be a pain in the neck. This won't be easy.
You're not
going to get an answer to that from my friend that works at Universal or at Sony Music or at BMG, because those are giant conglomerates.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's now, a whole other level of distribution.
Well, I mean, yeah, everything's different. But I mean, and I think it's great that you're doing it yourself, because I mean, I think the bigger that you can build your own base, then the longer that you can keep it going.
I mean, for sure. I mean, that's the goal, guys. Look, just by sheer virtue of my resume, I've had such an incredible career. And I just want to get to keep playing music and making music, and more important than anything, just being with my family. And quite honestly, that's been the greatest fulfillment of transitioning to just being a solo artist, because I'm in charge of the calendar as well. I'm not beholden to 5 or 6 or 8 other people when you start including managers and booking agents, you know, to make decisions about how I'm going to have to spend 6 months out of my life every year. So that being the motivation, and me having, you know, an incredible family that supports me continuing to pursue my dream and follow my bliss. What a great life. So I just feel even more committed and obligated, honestly, to work as hard as I can, make this thing as productive as it can be, you know, climb as high as we can, man. You know, I'd love to do festivals with Damon Johnson and the Get Ready. I'd love to see us move up the bill and have, you know, better slots on the stage and get some support slots on some big tours, man, once we get the green light to hit it. And I just know that Battle Essence is the perfect calling card to make all of those things happen. This is the record that's going to help us open more and more of those doors. It just is, guys. I can't wait for you to hear the whole thing. You're going to remember us talking about it. You're going to go, okay, now I see why he was so fired up about this record, because it's going to be a game changer for me. It already is, but it's really going to be once we can get back to work and once the full length is out.
We understand. We're super excited. And hey, family, friends, music, in that order, three most important things in my life, I think. So, you know.
Amen.
That's it, right? So it's perfect time, since we were talking about, you know, promotion and whatever, it's the perfect time for us to just give you the chance to unless Brett, you had another question you wanted to ask.
Well, actually, I was just going to ask if Sarah sings on Battle Lessons.
I'm sorry. Ask that question again. You were going to ask what about Battle Lessons?
Oh, if Sarah sings on this one.
Oh, if Sarah sings on it. No, thank you for asking. My daughter Sarah now lives in California, and we have two kids that live at home with us still, and then my other two older ones live down in Alabama, and I've been able to see them a couple of times, but sadly, I have not been in the same room with Sarah since February. But she's super healthy, super active, super busy, and I guarantee we're going to do some stuff together again. She completely knocked it out of the baseball park with her job she did singing on my acoustic record 10 years ago. And, you know, my favorite story about that is she was just so unimpressed with any of it. You know, you know what I mean? Being in a real studio and getting behind the microphone. And she has a really special, natural character in her singing voice. And she's completely aloof to it, guys. And I will never forget, we're at the studio, you know, the engineer's there, the studio owner's there. So I walk Sarah out to the vocal booth, show her where she needs to stand. I'm like, you know, try to keep your mouth about this far from the mic. And let's just sing the song twice and see where we are. So she sings it twice, perfectly, blows everybody's mind. So she comes in, sits down. I'm like, Sarah, do you want to hear what it sounds like? She goes, not really, Dad. Can we go to Starbucks? I mean, that was it. No, I'm good, Dad. Can we go to Starbucks? Like, she didn't even care. And it's like, do you understand that you just killed this? You did such a great job. These two other dudes over here, their jaws are on the floor. They can't believe how great you sing. And you don't even care. Like, this is going to get released to the world. It will live in infamy in the digital cosmos forever. And she couldn't be bothered. So I thought that was pretty, pretty awesome. Pretty badass. Great. If you think about it, man.
That's fantastic stuff.
That's badass.
All right.
All right. So now is the time for you to tell everybody where they can keep up with you and you know, where they can find battle lessons and anything else you're doing. And if when you are finally doing concert dates and the grinding balls are opening for the Get Ready, where that'll be, everything to promote yourself, this is your chance. Please plug it.
Guys, I appreciate that so much. I appreciate this time you've given me. DamonJohnson.com is a one-stop place to get everything. All my social media links are there. The tour dates are going to be there. The pre-order campaign is still up and will continue to be up into the, you know, throughout the fall and into the early winter. And, you know, I'm just, I'm really grateful to you guys, man, for, man, we did a pretty good deep dive right there on my whole story.
Oh, and I know we still got more, because honestly, I mean, like I say, I've been listening to you since the very first Brother Kane album, and it's just like Brother Kane and Black Star Riders and all these bands. I mean, it's just like, yep, listening to Damon Johnson, man.
We got CM Shade in there, which is what really people were tuning in for.
That's true.
That's right. That's what most of your listeners are interested in, is that CM Shade. I think that was the first time I had played a guitar with a Floyd Rose whammy bar on it since I was like a teenager, you know, because I had to use that on some of the songs. So it was fun. It's like, wow, this is like playing along to, you know, my butt rock records back in the 80s, man.
Awesome.
But fellas, listen, continued success to you. And thank you so much for having me on, and I hope our paths cross in person really soon.
Me too, Damon. Yeah. You know, like I said, huge fan, and all the best to you in the future, and I can't wait to hear Battle Lessons.
Brother, thank you so much. I'll make sure that the girls get you the new music as we crank it out. You said you'd already heard Can't Clap Any Louder, right?
That's right. So, yeah, it was great. Jody sent it to just before we were able to get on with you, so that was good stuff.
Fantastic. Well, we got more coming, fellas. I can't wait for you to hear it, and I look forward to speaking again.
For sure. And, you know, when the grinding balls open for the Get Ready, then I know that every song is just going to be under my wheels, but it'll just, you just won't be able to tell.
No, that's pretty much true.
I can't wait for that. I can't wait for you to warble, Can't Clap Any Louder in my face. Oh. All right, fellas. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks, David. Bye now.
All right. Bye-bye.
Defending you.